Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another Actual Fluency podcast. This is episode number 185. And today I'm joined by Sadel Wiltshire to talk about her experiences learning languages, especially minority languages, and how to learn as part of a community, her experiences learning languages at different ages. We talk a little bit about 60 plus language learning as well, and how that's a great way to keep the mind fresh and sharp. But anyway, this conversation took place a while ago, so I will magically change my appearance and background when we get started. But I hope you enjoy this episode. And if you have any guest suggestions or you'd like to be on the podcast, if you have an interesting language learning story, or maybe you have achieved something interesting with languages, then send me a message, chris@actualfluency.com. And I would be happy to have you on. But for now, enjoy this episode with Sadel, and I will see you in the next one. And we'll get the episode started with me asking Sadel to give a little introduction of herself and her experiences learning languages. Enjoy.
Okay, well, I'll try to give you a brief snapshot of my name is Sadel Wiltshire. I live in southern Vermont in the US. I have always loved languages ever since I was quite small. I first started in junior high school with Spanish, and I took to it easily. So, and I know there's a lot of people that say that they don't take to languages easily. And I think honestly, it's just a matter of your interest, and also, I'll get into that. There's this whole layer of perfectionism in not just my country, but all over the world now, that I think gets in people's way. But I went from Spanish in junior high school to Spanish in high school, and then found myself kind of just maxing out on the Spanish classes and taking honors classes. And it was like almost too easy. It was a little weird, but we never really got a chance to speak. And then when I went into college, I wasted a year of college in architecture school, another story. But when I quit architecture school and I went back into liberal arts, the first thing I did was run back to languages, and I went back to Spanish. And I had maxed out their basic levels of Spanish classes also. I kind of tested out of them. So they stuck me in graduate level literature classes, which was actually great, because that's where I started with, I got a lot of, I guess, Colombian Spanish and Mexican Spanish in my head from my profs, and everything was in Spanish. And then I got bored. And I decided to say, okay, well, let me try something a little harder. And, I have Russian is kind of a heritage language for me. So I started studying Russian and fell in love with it. And it became my major. And then I spent a summer in a place that's no longer in existence, but it was a rival of Middlebury College's summer programs at Norwich University, called the Russian School. 7 weeks, absolutely no English. Wow. With the goal to help me get into grad school and pass the MLA exams at the time. And I did. And then and then my life changed, because I met somebody. And I ended up going to the grad school that he was going to. And not going down to DC, I wanted to go to a translation program. So anyway, got a chance to spend 3 months in the Soviet Union. Which is, now we're going back a number of years, so I'm dating myself. So I did have some experience living in a country, I already had some of the language, I was already conversational, but that just upped it up a huge notch for me. So at one point in my life, I was pretty fluent in Russian. And then life changed again. And when I moved up here to Vermont, there weren't many opportunities to speak it. At the time, I had decided that I didn't want to go into the government. There were a lot of jobs in the government, especially like the CIA and the NSA. And there was no way I was interested in that sort of work. And so I sort of let that, it was kind of like this dream that just suddenly died, because that's what they were looking for. That's what the jobs were at the time. So over the years, I've always been interested in folk music And so I've gotten exposed to a lot of French, especially Quebecois French. And I got a chance to hear some Irish and Scottish Gaelic as well at these folk festivals. And so that's like a big love for me. And then fast forward years later, I mean, I did take a little bit of Quebecois French, but I really can't speak it at all. And then 4 years ago, it was after I came back from Scotland, of all places, I was really looking for a Scottish Gaelic class, but there weren't to be found around here. And then there was a local post, a local flyer at one of the food shops in town that somebody was teaching Irish.
Wow.
And I had always, you know, I'd always gotten frustrated with Irish. It's one of those languages that you look at it and you're like, that just makes absolutely no sense. It's got Latin letters, but you just cannot make out how to pronounce things if, you know, you're like a Spanish or an, you know, English, you know, Latin or German or English speaker. It makes no sense. And so I had gone to these singing workshops where they give us the lyrics in Irish, and, you know, my eyes would just glaze over. So this was a great, so that was my initial like inroad to Irish. But what I learned was that, man, these people love to laugh and have fun. And we have a great teacher. I still take classes with him once a week, and he gets us laughing like nobody else can. And he got us speaking really early, which was, you know, and part of it is, and this is like, I guess, part of the tradition in Ireland is there's a long, long tradition of storytelling where you have these itinerant storytellers that go from place to place and would tell stories. So he got us sitting around, you know, the kitchen table with some food and just, you know, Cain Scale is how you say, what's this, you know, literally like, what's the story, or, you know, what's your story? But it's like, you know, what's new? So, and we were encouraged to do that, like right from the start, you know, even with like a couple of words. So it's my first minority language. And I love learning it, and learning it online has been amazing. And actually I think COVID has helped, because there are so many programs that are available now online. And there's been a lot of cultural things through Ireland that happen at certain times of the year that that allow me to be in touch with people from Ireland as well. Let's see. The other thing I guess I just want to say is community, but I can talk about that more. Community is really, really important. There's a big Irish community here in the States.
Oh yeah, of course, the big heritage language learning community going on. Well, that's super cool, and perhaps not the language one would first guess to learn if you're living in New England, it's very popular there, I guess.
Yes, yeah. Well, Boston, I mean, Massachusetts. I live not far from the Massachusetts border, and there are. There are huge numbers of folks from Ireland had migrated to Boston, to all the big cities, really, New York, you know, Philadelphia,
of course.
But Boston is a huge one.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome. And I love people connecting with the heritage in that way, because I've talked on the podcast previously about other heritage languages in the US, like, for instance, Danish, which I'm from Denmark. So I went to this small Danish town, and it was interesting to see that a lot of the traditions were kept in small places, but for many, like, the language was completely gone. Like, it was just English now, which is, of course, a great shame. So it's nice to see that other communities can kind of stick with it and stay with that heritage, because I feel like a lot of the Danish people I talk to are, you know, let's say cultural Danish, not that they were from Denmark, but they consider it quite a sad thing that their language was lost a few generations ago. So yeah, that's what can happen, and quite fast too. So
yeah, yeah. And when I talk about community, I guess I should say communities of language learners that I've connected with. And there's a huge community of Irish learners up and down the East Coast. There's an organization called Dalty.com that they sponsor immersion weekends. And that's kind of what put the fire under me to really ramp up my Irish in the past year and a half, was going to one of those events and kind of getting headaches after about an hour and a half of only speaking Irish. But you'll find there are concentrations, like for instance, Springfield, Vermont, there's a concentration of the Irish diaspora. And there's a community center, and there's Elms College, which actually they do have Irish classes at this college. They put on events there. So there, and you'll also find, especially like in Massachusetts, I've noticed pockets where you'll have Irish is one of those languages where you've got three major dialects. There's the Ulster in the north, there's Connacht, kind of mid western coast, and then Munster in the south. And there's a big pocket of Munster Irish immigrants from that in the Springfield, Massachusetts area, which is closer to me. And then there's a big pocket of the Connacht speakers in Boston. And mm-hmm. And that's the dialect that I'm attempting to learn.
Great. So how would you, let's talk about language learning in general. So how would you kind of contrast your Irish experience with, let's say, the Russian or the Spanish, and even the French you had as well? What were the main kind of differences, and did you find anything that was working, not working at all, or something that was working really well? Take us through that.
Wow, Irish is so totally different from all of those languages. I have to say it's the hardest language I've ever studied. Now, I mean, I'm saying that as someone who has not been in college and not been in an active language learning position in many years, although I did take some French about 12 years ago. It's just a totally different beast. So I started with Spanish, French, even German were to me relatively easy. Russian was a little harder. People tell me, oh, Russian is really, really hard. I compare that to Irish, and it's like Russian's down here and Irish is way up here.
Right.
And it's not, you know, it's not even, I mean, there's no six cases, you know, there isn't a different alphabet. Well, I shouldn't say different alphabet, but there is, it's a Latin alphabet, but things are just totally different the way you pronounce things. And that was a huge hurdle, actually, was learning to pronounce things. That was the first hurdle that we had in our class. Was so, you know, to be able to read out loud. And then, but the problem, I think the thing with Irish, and I love it. And I love challenges. So that's why I'm doing it too. But it's, I think you need to be one of those people that, you know, doesn't mind being challenged with a language. But the thing with Irish is the grammar can be daunting. So I recommend, you know, I always recommend people start with a book that doesn't hammer you over the head with grammar, that just, you get it sort of sideways. Yeah. And then you'll get curious after a while and say, okay, tell me more about that. Because I can tell you right now, I am still, do not have my, I can't, my declensions in genitive, especially with my nouns and adjectives. Down, because there's so many rule changes and there's so many rule exceptions. I've never seen so many rule exceptions in my life. it's a fascinating language. It's a beautiful language, and I love that there are, you know, three different dialects to listen to, you know, so it's different that way too. I don't remember like saying, oh, you know, you're learning Moscow dialect or St. Petersburg dialect or anything like that. I do remember there was a difference with Spanish, and it wasn't huge though. It was more of, you know, a little bit of pronunciation, and I found that I personally preferred Latin American Spanish, so I kind of stuck to that. But that's also, you know, what my profs had. So.
Yeah, and it's a strange thing to aspire to be perfect in grammar. I always find it's like, well, isn't it about communicating first and foremost. You know, it's
Exactly.
being grammatically completely correct just seems like a very hard task to set yourself, especially in the beginning. So, but that goes for a lot of languages. I mean, Russian, it's also a lot of grammar to know, but and German as well. A little bit less important in German, I guess, but it's it depends on what you want to do. I know a lot of university programs, they focus a lot on the on reading and kind of translating, whereas that most, I would say, not hobby learners or you know people learning by themselves probably would prioritize speaking and listening. And that re doesn't require perfect grammar in any way. So if anyone listening is worried about that, then definitely don't freak out about that, because that'll come and you'll see the patterns and get there. I guess also your Irish is more, sorry, go ahead.
Oh yeah, no, I was just going to say, and I think just letting go of that perfection, because people don't really care when you're just having conversation, unless they're, grammar police. But then I try not to hang around those folks.
Right. You just want to communicate your meaning across. So that's the step one. But I guess Irish is also the language you've learned, you know, where you had the most technology available to help,
Oh my God, yes.
and kind of, you know, I can't even imagine what it must have been like to learn languages independently, like before digital flashcards, and like you know, that must have been such a challenge, and I guess it would be hard to even find a lot of materials in countries.
Well, I think especially with Irish, I can't imagine what it would have been like learning Irish without the internet now, because of resources. I mean, certainly Irish has a whole lot more resources available than, let's say, Scottish Gaelic, but and a number of other minority languages. But still, I mean, I can turn on the tele. I can turn on. There's a website you can go to called tg4.ie, and that is Irish. That's the Irish language television station. And I just mirror cast that to my big TV, and I get to watch Irish television programs, and it's pretty darn awesome. I can't ever imagine doing anything like that before. There's so many resources now available. Actually, I just finished taking a 6-week Irish cooking class,
Wow.
which was, following a teacher who's teaching us a recipe in Irish. And man, well, that's a whole other subject. It's learning things that you really love. And if you focus on that and you don't focus so much on the grammar and just, focus on speaking, focus on listening, focus on, some reading, because reading is a great way to learn to learn vocab. But that to me was gold. To be able to know that I could sit in one of these classes and follow a recipe and watch her do this and understand, even if I missed a word or two, and but that opportunity would not have been available to me, I think, even, well, not just, before the internet, but I think before COVID. I
Sure.
don't think people were using Zoom the way they're using it now, and this was entirely led on Zoom.
Yeah,
So,
definitely inspired a lot of organizations, teachers, and companies to offer a virtual version of their courses or products. So in a way, that's one positive aspect of this whole pandemic, is that it's definitely given access to more things from abroad. You know, we talk sometimes about the Polyglot Conference, the Polyglot Gathering, these two main in-person conferences that take place every year, and a lot of people are quite kind of, you know, upset about them not happening because of the pandemic. But actually, there's even more people who are very happy they're online, because now they can actually attend.
I'm one of
Whereas,
them.
yeah,
I'm
there
one
you
of them.
go.
I just came off of my second Polyglot conference, and it was amazing.
Yeah,
So.
so you know, it's I guess even in dark times, there's still light to be found, and language learning is one of those opportunities.
And I think, I know one thing that you were interested in talking about was, language learning for people over 60. And so I will say And I don't know if this is the case as much with other languages, but it seems to me that there's a huge, huge amount of folks over 60 that are actually learning Irish now. And right. when I take classes online, I want to say 70% of them are in that age range.
But why do you think the average person is learning Irish? Is it mostly heritage reasons that their forefathers, as it were, that came to the U.S., or is it more of the culture, or where does it come from?
I think a good percentage of them are heritage, come to it from that it's in their family. That maybe their parents didn't speak it, but their grandparents spoke it.
Right.
Although actually their parents didn't. Yeah. Or yeah, but mostly that that it's in their blood. That said, there's a good percentage, and I'm one of them, of folks that came to it through culture and music and art. So yeah.
So it's something that you enjoy already, and you want to mm-hmm. kind of enhance that experience, connect more with the experience and the culture. So you learn the language. What other benefits or personal enjoyment have you gotten from learning languages, not just Irish maybe, but maybe you have some examples from your Spanish or your Russian of experiences or maybe even opportunities that wouldn't have existed if you hadn't learned those languages?
It's a little hard to say for my Russian right now, because it was so far removed, and again, I was fluent more like 40 years ago. I did start to revive it this summer.
You lived there in...
I did.
And you lived most of your life, presumably, when you were there through Russian, right?
I did. Right. We spent 3 months at Moscow University. So
it must have been a great feeling to kind of go there with a good language level that you could just kind of assimilate in straight into the environment.
It was really great, and I have to credit my grad courses. Most of our courses were led in Russian, so we got speaking. We also had a very strong exchange program with Moscow University, so there would be students that would come over. Before we went over, we got to interact with students from Moscow, in our own home, in our home base. I got to socialize quite a bit in the language, which I think is really important to be able to socialize. And so then to take that and then transplant ourselves over in Moscow, there were times that when we were with some Americans, we'd slip back into English, but a lot of times we didn't. A lot of times, we tried really hard to stick with Russian, and it was easier coming at it from, going over there with an intermediate level of the language. And I kind of feel like that if I were to go over to Ireland now, and spend my time in what they call the Gaeltachts, which are really small pockets of Ireland where it's spoken every day. And I think I would have a much easier time.
But you would like to have a sort of a good level first, or a good back minimum kind of knowledge. Or would you just go there with nothing and get straight into it?
I know a lot of people that do, because there's a program in Donegal called Igiscoil, and it's a school where people go for two weeks. I think it's mostly 2 weeks that they go for at a time, for intensive Irish learning. I think people at any level could do that. From what I've heard, that people will sometimes go to the Gaeltacht with just a tiny, tiny bit, or the cúpla focal, as they say, which is like a couple of words, and they might get a hello back or something, a simple greeting, but then people will automatically start speaking English, because it's just easier. And I suspect that's, it's kind of like going to, I suppose Denmark or the Netherlands, you know, even, you know, and trying to speak a couple of those words, and then people say, oh, but you're, you know, we know plenty of English. It'll be easier for us to talk in English.
Absolutely. We do see that a lot, especially the better English in the country, the more likely people are to switch over when they hear an accent or people struggling with getting the words out.
Right.
But it's interesting how, I would say if I had to go alone to a country to, and I didn't know any of the language, obviously everyone's different. I would definitely need that intensive setup, because if I was responsible for it on my own, I would feel quite overwhelmed by everything else trying to sort out, you know. But if you're going for let's say a limited time, you still have your home in another country, and you're signing up for one of these intensive classes where they kind of take you through it, so you don't have to worry about the admin and organization of the materials.
Right.
That, yeah, I could see that being really powerful. And obviously you're part of a community there too, because there's other students in the class.
Right.
And having a connection with other people is so important, isn't it? And
yeah,
it's so powerful for something, I can imagine, for something like Irish, where you have that the rich culture, and you know, how nice is it to learn how to cook some Irish dishes in Irish? That's really a really great one. What other ways have you found community to be valuable to your learning?
Well, music community, and I guess I'll say this, you know, again, my interactions with the French have been so minute, but my it was the folk music that brought me up there. I used to play the fiddle, and my main interest was Quebecois fiddle, traditional fiddle music. So I would go to some of these festivals, and there was a festival in, it was about an hour and a half north of Montreal, that where most people just spoke French. And I volunteered one year, and an American who had volunteered the year before to me said, well, here's the tip about volunteering, because you get to camp there if you volunteer. She said, you know, if you sign up for the garbage crew or the rubbish crew to just clean up the grounds, you usually don't have to interact with people, and then you don't have to speak the language. So I signed up, and all of those spots were gone, and they stuck me in the food crew. And so all of a sudden I found myself in this position where I had to listen to people give me instructions in French about cooking and taking, you know, pots of food over to feed the performers without any French at the time. So, you know, after that experience, I thought, okay, let me just get a little bit of French, because I had lots of music words in my head, because I could go to a workshop in music and understand what they were talking about, but it didn't have the grammatical glue to put the words together.
Sure.
So I ended up taking like one semester at Bennington College, I think it was, and it was just enough to put so I could string a couple sentences together. Unfortunately, I haven't used it since. I mean, we were just up in Quebec in August, and you know, I can go into a store and ask for things, and you know, do stuff like that, but don't ask me anything more complicated than food, you know, ordering food or, you know, shopping.
Yeah, got it. You got the basics. But even that's what I like about languages to a large degree, is that you don't need much for it to make a big difference. And a big difference in somebody else's life too. You know, you go into a shop, and maybe that shop is used to, you know, everyone speaking English or tourists or things like that. Once you show a little bit of initiative, and you want to, you know, show that their language matters too, even if it's just hello, how are you, I just find that the smile and it just literally makes someone's day, even if you speak with like a kind of a clumsy and, let's say, underdeveloped language skill. Maybe you make like 10 grammar mistakes per sentence. I've always found that people really appreciate the effort. And you know, if you think about it, if you made that clerk or that waiter or somebody's day 10% better just because you tried to say a few words in French or whatever language it is, I mean, I don't know any other hobbies that give you that instant kind of benefit, you know, because you can just learn how to say, how are you, right?
Right, right, right. Yeah, I'll tell you a couple, here's an interesting story from Spanish, my Spanish days. So After it was towards the end of my my undergraduate studies, I spent a summer in Europe doing, you know, backpacking through Europe and getting a URL pass and doing all that. And I did most of it alone. And when I was in Spain, I found myself one day on the train, and one of the ticket collectors started kind of making moves on. I was 21. It was like basically making moves on me and making me very, very uncomfortable. But my level of Spanish was enough that I was able to turn around and say to him, "Look, buddy, if you don't leave me alone now, I'm going to tell my boyfriend who's waiting at the next station, and he's going to beat the hell out of you."
There you go.
You know, having enough of a language that you can, you know, like, take care of your own safety. Also, especially if you're traveling alone and you're a woman in particular, is a very useful thing to have. I actually had to use that in Germany too, and I had just enough German to pull that off.
Yeah, and I guess there's also the risk of just getting lost and things like that. Something that's slightly less serious, but you know, not understanding the signs and you know, you have to ask for everything, can be quite annoying, having to find people all the time. Right. Now, obviously, now we have like everything in our pocket and Google Translate. So it's harder, but it takes away the magic a little bit of that old exploration and, you know.
And Google Translate's not going to help you when you have somebody stalking you at a train station.
That's true.
And you have to think quick. Right. You know, don't have time to stop and, you know, be punching.
The robot voice is not as intimidating, is it?
No.
But yeah, it's great. Do you feel like, you know, the thing about going to Europe, is it just me, or did that used to be a bigger thing in the US? Because I feel like if you watch movies, yeah, I've watched a lot of movies from like the 90s or the 2000s, it feels like every American at some point was like, yes, I have to go to Europe. But go to Europe, you know, it's kind of nondescript, but I just, today, is that still a thing, or is that kind of changed a little bit because we're so interconnected?
That's a really good question, and I don't know that I could answer that because I'm not that in that age range now, and so my interactions with going to Europe look very different. I know that, well, I had heard from a number of people while I was still in university that, you know, this is the time to go before you get stuck into a real job and have to live like an adult. And also because it was so much cheaper to do it as a student, because you get student rates on your URL passes and, you know, student rates in the hostels and in the museums and all the places.
Yeah.
So
lots of programs available as well that would organize the whole thing for you. And, you know,
I organized it myself. And I kind of flew by the seat of my pants and like changed my mind a lot. I had some friends though. And so I had places to land at various stages of my 3-month journey. So I had friends in Finland and Sweden, and I had friends in Germany. And so those were like my home bases, I guess, if you will.
Oh, you went all the way up to Finland. That's a long,
well, I didn't quite. I didn't get to Finland on that trip, but my Finnish pen pal, my childhood Finnish pen pal, was living in Sweden at the time, so I got to spend a week with her in Stockholm, which was amazing.
Yeah, hopefully it was summer, so it wasn't too icy.
Oh God, yeah. That said, when I did get to go to Finnish, and also going back, dive back into languages for a minute. So when I was doing my master's program for Russian, we had to study a few other languages. So we had to take at least two other Slavic languages. And then they asked us to take one non-Indo-European language.
Wow.
And we managed to find somebody on the campus who spoke fluent Finnish. And so she taught us Finnish for a year.
Wow.
And then it was after taking that Finnish class that we did our semester in Moscow. And so our last week we planned this. Our last week right after we left Russia, we took the train to Helsinki in the middle of the winter.
Yikes. Yeah, that's cold.
Yeah, that was quite, that was my first experience with 40 below temperatures, which is 40 below, by the way, is the same in Celsius and
Celsius.
Fahrenheit.
Right, you're right. You're right. But it's bad in both of them,
It's very bad. Yeah, and I learned about, how well they you need to buy felt boot liners. That's how you keep your feet warm. And
Yeah.
everybody has a sauna in their apartment.
There you go. How to keep warm otherwise, you know? No, it's great. It's
Yes.
dangerous, that kind of temperature, you know. It's almost like,
Yeah.
you know, you can easily get
Yeah.
hypothermia and everything. But yeah, so
Yeah.
what the last thing I just wanted to touch on before we finish was the kind of the age of the language learner. You know, we hear a
Yes.
lot about, oh, if you don't learn a language by age 5, you pretty much, there's no way you can learn a language. You know, we have these naysayers and, you
Right.
know, negative people basically. And then we have some people who, let's say when you retire, they move to abroad, usually to the, you know, to the sun of, it could be Spain, Mexico. I see a lot of people moving to Portugal as well, where I live. That's perhaps more the Brits, more than the Americans, but I still see a lot of Americans coming here as well. So there would be people learning who are, let's say, 55 plus, 60 plus. I've had
Right.
emails from people who are 80 plus and learning Thai or other, you know, hot country languages, you know.
Yes.
So what's your thoughts on this, like the ageism almost in language learning, and what does it give you in terms of benefits to pursue a language at your age?
Okay, so I would say the number one thing is keeping your brain active. If you don't use it, you lose it. I mean, that goes with physical activity as well as mental activity. So keeping it's a wonderful, wonderful way to keep your brain active. And actually, that was one of the other motivating factors for me to try to dive back into Irish. Yeah, my memory isn't all so great, but it's not great in English either.
That's a great argument.
It's fine. It's I think, A, you do have to have the motivation. And if you don't have, or if you have the motivation, but you're feeling deflated all the time because you're learning slowly, learning with a group of other learners that are motivated as well can be a great thing, especially if you're in some sort of a structure where you can hold, keep each other accountable. So I don't, if you don't mind, I mean, I've gotten that through some of my local interactions because I have an Irish learners community around me here, but I also got it tenfold when I did Benny Lewis's Fluent 3 Months Challenge in
Yeah.
February, which was a great thing to do during the pandemic, but even not in the pandemic, because there are a lot of people in that program that are in exactly that position. Not all, but it's a lot of young learners too. But of the older folks, a lot of them are going to those countries like Portugal and Spain and Latin America and whatnot.
Moving
And
for the
so we see
sun.
a moving to the sun, yeah. In Thai, we have a few Thai, we have a few, in Mexico. And so, it's been great to have that community and see that, okay, I'm not the only one doing this. I have some structure around me and I have people cheering me on and people I can check in with. And so, I mean, and there are lots of other places you can get that. You can find that through meetup groups. There's a number of Facebook groups you can find for your language communities. So, but I think especially for people 60 and over who are constantly getting them, well, they've had years and years of having to get things perfect. So letting, that's the other thing is it's hard, I think, for a lot of folks that are older to let go of that being perfect because they had to do it all their work life, and just let themselves make mistakes. But frankly, you're going to have the most fun and you're going to have the most laughter if you let yourself just make mistakes.
Oh
And
yeah, I love that so
yeah.
much. If you can accept that you are terrible in the language and you just go use it anyway and, you know,
Yeah.
get a few laughs, and that to me is the funniest thing ever.
And then these jokes, you know, sometimes, you know, in like my Irish class, we have all these in jokes now, you know, for right. just mistakes that some of us have made.
Right. You
know, like one of the biggest ones in Irish is the difference between caca and caca. Caca right. is a cake, and caca is probably what you think it is.
Right. Yeah. That, yeah. Like English. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, learning to laugh.
I have a great story about that. I have a great story about that too. One of the funniest things that's ever happened to me, and I'll never forget it. So I'm doing an intensive Esperanto weekend in Berlin with some Esperantists. And I just started the language, basically. I just spent a few hours on flashcards. So I had a little bit of a vocabulary, but the language is pretty regular. So there's almost no rules to learn, you know, as long as you learn the conjugations, then the patterns, then you can pretty much speak it in a weekend. But anyway, we have this long weekend, we have like a 12-hour day, and we're not allowed to speak English or any German or anything else, really. Sometimes we would anyway, but mostly it's all in Esperanto. So after the first day, I'm just fried. My brain is just like, what have you done to me? So I wake up the next day and we go for the first kind of meeting of the day. And on the way, I ask one of the organizers, I think I said, "Chuvi havas tempon por aĉeti kafeon?" And she just didn't skip a beat. By the way, what I said was, "Do we have time to buy a coffee?" I thought, because, you know, I was basically, I needed caffeine to function.
Right.
And she didn't skip a beat. I love her for this. Judith is her name. And she just said, I don't remember the Esperanto. I'm not going to make it up now. But she basically said, "I don't know if we have time to buy a whole cafe, but we could certainly find a place to buy a coffee." So I had said cafe on instead of kafon. And I was asking if we had time to buy a cafe. So that was, and you know, big shout out to Judith for just, you know, just going straight with it, you know, instead of trying to correct it right away. Just that was a good wake up laugh there. And but the example, you know, that happens. But if some people might have said, "Oh, I'm disappointed in myself that I made that mistake," or "I wouldn't have said anything because I wasn't sure whether it was one or the other." And I would just say, being not honest, that's the wrong word, but being true to your skill level and just throwing what you know out there, right. It really comes back like tenfold. Honestly, it does.
It does. It does. And I mean, a great example of this is, I was always afraid to getting started going to the conversation circles in our town, for our Irish conversation circles, when I was just beginning. It was really, really hard for me to show up, because I would go there and I would just listen to people and they'd ask me questions and I'd go, "Huh?" But I had just come back from Scotland this one particular time, and I had this long tour and I had all these things I'd done. So before I showed up at the conversation circle, I wrote down, I went to blank, I went to blank, I went to blank, I went to, you know, just repeating this over and over, you know, just a whole list of all of the towns that I visited, you know, and it sounded like, you know, baby Irish, but I was able to at least communicate and say, "Yeah, I went to Scotland and I went to Edinburgh and Glasgow and blah, 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 blah," you know, and at least I felt somewhat functional, even at, you know, at this low level. And, you know, and I mean, and now I look back and I'm like, you know, I kind of wish I could have patted that, you know, baby Irish Sadell on the back and said, "Good job," that day. But people were great, you know, and understanding. And I think, you know, I think for people, especially that are older, you know, that get, the other thing I would just say is, yeah, you know, find some place, find a group of people you can be accountable with, find other people also your age that are doing this, you know, as well. I mean, just again, for kind of group moral support, there are lots of opportunities to meet with people online, especially these days. So it's not hard to find. I mean, if I can find it in Irish, people can certainly find it in those sun countries.
Spanish and Portuguese, yeah. And I guess if you move to these places, you'd probably live in a kind of place where that's popular with people from your country anyway. So you'd have a local network, surely, many of those
I think
places.
that's more dangerous because it's easier for people, especially at the lower levels, to fall back into speaking English, from what I've heard.
No, that's
So,
definitely I guess you have to balance that risk of, it's good to
yeah.
connect in person too. That does make a difference. But if
But yeah,
that
people have to have that, like, okay, this is our Spanish speaking club. We're going to meet at a cafe and we are going to speak. We are going to butcher the language, but we're going to butcher it in Spanish.
You have to set out the rules initially. But yeah, I see where that could kind of be a little dangerous. Definitely, because the temptation's obvious. You would just want to speak English to your expat friends in your little community, and I think that's one of the saddest things, actually, if you look at neighborhoods and places in these countries where it's just a lot of tourists or a lot of people, expats from those countries, and they've lived there 20 years and they can barely order a coffee in the language. And that to me is just sad. And it's not because I'm judging people, but the effort required to learn that is like nothing. It wouldn't take much, but they have made a conscious decision, or maybe a subconscious decision, that it's not worth it to spend that little energy on learning some of the language. But
I
hopefully
think it
that's what a
depends on,
podcast like this can help with. That's the ambition anyway, that we share the benefits, we share how easy it is, even though it's not always easy. And we share basically some practical tips and strategies, like you were saying about the Fluent in 3 Months challenge, which is basically an accountability challenge with other people. There's the cooking classes in local schools and the intensive classes you mentioned. So
The
that's the
immersion
whole.
classes,
Exactly, yeah. Those are something I would love to do as well in the future. They're not as popular around here, I know. The only one I've heard of is Middlebury. I haven't seen any sort of pop up around here in Europe, but
So I know there's something now. I know that stateside there's an organization called Alliance Française that sponsors some things. I don't know what there is in Europe. That is a really good question. I
I
should
haven't
ask
seen
one
it.
of
Of course,
my
there's lots of evening
friends.
classes, there's lots of courses and things like that, and lots of teachers and tutors and university degrees and everything, but I haven't seen those kind of immersion. But maybe, somebody listening who's from Europe, some entrepreneurial mind out there could get started on that. But
Yeah, especially
anyway,
if it's tourism based.
yeah, no, I think that's what's required. The other way is, of course, learn the basics or to a middle level and then go to the country. That's sort of your own immersion, right? That's also something I want to do when COVID is it's a little bit more over than it is now. Not sure when this guy goes out, but yeah, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast and
Oh, you're
sharing your
welcome.
story and experiences and tips with the listeners. And just for anyone listening out there, if you have an interesting language learning story or tips or tricks or anything you want to come and share, send me an email and we can get the ball rolling. The more the merrier, on the podcast, and the more diverse experiences, the better I think it is for people listening. So thank you for that.
Yep, you're welcome. And thank you for this great podcast. I've been listening for over a year now.
Well,
So
thank you.
it's been
I
fun.
appreciate it.